Welcome to the Architect My Life podcast. I'm Aya Schlachter, serial entrepreneur and CEO of the MGS Global Group, supporting architecture and design firms with project delivery, such as drafting, 3D visualization, and graphics production support. I am also the founder of Architect My Life. My goal is to help creative entrepreneurs such as architects and other design-related professionals grow their businesses while keeping their work-life balance. Each podcast episode features a different woman business owner or thought leader from the creative industry who shares their journey and challenges. If you have a growth story that others in our community could benefit from, please stay until the end of the show to get selected as a guest in our future episodes. Now, let's dive into this episode. Hi, everybody. Today, I'm really excited to introduce our guest for the show, Sonia Happy. Sonia is the principal of V-Star Interiors, beginning her career in 2000. She leads the day-to-day operations and works closely with firm's president, Venus Williams, on keeping V-Star running as a well-oiled machine. Sonia has attended Florida State University, and after graduating, she studied interior design abroad, such as London, Paris, Milan, and Glasgow. With her leadership, they have won multiple design awards and most recently won the 2019 Hospitality Design Wave of the Future. I got introduced to Sonia via a common friend, Ron, who is one of the movers and shakers and thought leaders in the hospitality industry. And when I asked him to introduce me to any firm owners, women firm owners, he only recommended one person. And that person is Sonia. Welcome to the show, Sonia.
Thank you so much. And that is so sweet of Ron. I just absolutely adore him.
He's great. He's, you know, amazing. So tell me about yourself. I think personal background would be a good place to start.
Great. So I started the industry, as you said, back in 2000. I was led to design through my family. My grandmother was very big and before interior design was a thing, she would design all of her own furniture because she didn't like furniture that she could purchase. And she would have the millworkers create everything for her home. And she built a home from ground up, her dream home in Brazil. And I never connected with it. My father's a physician. So I thought I'm supposed to be a physician. So I did go into pre-med in college and I was acing the classes, but very unhappy. And my mother stepped in and said, "You have to be happy with what you do, sweetheart." And she led me into interior design.
Wow, that's amazing. Tell me more about your grandmother.
So my grandmother—
she's from where again is she from?
From Brazil, small farm town actually in Brazil. And my grandfather was a physician there. And she, you know, they had a farmhouse and then they had their other home, but she just always designed everything. I feel like a lot of other countries besides the US are ahead of the game as it's involved with modernism. So her home was very modern and my aunts and uncles as well. Everyone was very modern and I really adapted into that. She came and lived with us later in life. And I think just living near her and having our birthdays a day apart, she just became my mentor in so many ways.
That's great. It's good to have that as a young, you know, in your early age. So you were in pre-med and that was so nice that your mom suggested that you become an interior designer. Other parents would probably, you know, not favor design versus being a doctor, correct?
Correct, including my father. I was terrified to tell him. He's always been supportive, but you know, he kept saying, "Sonia, you're making better grades than I ever made. You're going to be so successful. This is so amazing." So I just didn't want to disappoint him, but I was very unhappy. I felt, you know, I always say it's read, regurgitate. So your creative juices are somewhat suffocated. And I really missed that. And then they were building a home in Destin, Florida, and the architect couldn't make the plan work the way my mother wanted. And she sent me the plan in school, and I sketched over it and I made it exactly what she wanted. I added a bathroom. I told them there might be a slight slope because of your roof line, but I think everything should work out. So when she showed the architect, he assumed I was in architecture.
So how old were you then?
That was my sophomore year of college.
Okay, this was college as a physician or pre-med or college?
Pre-med.
Really? Yeah, you're meant to be in this profession, no yes, doubt.
Absolutely.
And so, so that was probably like an early sign that you needed to be in design. So tell me about your early career as an interior designer. How did you get your first job, or like, was it after all your schooling? Or tell me about all that.
Oh, that is the wildest story. I had, you don't really know what you're doing at that point in your life. I wanted to live in San Francisco. My godmother was living in Tiburon at that time. So I went and slept on her couch. And the only positions that I could find were working out of a Patagonia store. And that just wasn't good enough for me. I always like to push myself. So then I got a call from a friend in South Beach that said, I have a room. How much can you afford? And I moved to Miami Beach, only knowing this one person. And decided I could definitely find a position in my field there. And I hit the ground, found a position in 2 weeks. I was the longest standing employee at that firm, which was 2.5 years. And I was licensed immediately following the 2 years. And then I went on to start my own company.
So which company was that?
Urbanica Group.
Oh, okay. This is the Urbanica Group. So tell me about Urbanica Group and how long were you, how long were you in business for?
So with Urbanica Group, it was 6 years with my partner, George, who is an architect out of Argentina. So we were the yin and yang, he was the male machismo and I was the softer leader side. And we built the company up. It was in the height of the market there for condos. We did a lot of condo development. And, all good things come to an end. And I had a major life-changing surgery that led me to believe, that just wasn't for me. I was burning the wick at both ends. And I wanted to find a balance in my life. And so I sold my half of the company to him and then moved on.
So is it still a business right now? It's still running?
Yeah, he runs it in, kind of behind closed doors. He has projects on his own. He's not advertising a lot.
So what was your role in Urbanica? Were you the designer or you did everything?
So... everything. So definitely within controlling finances, contracts, all CA, material and finish selections, space planning. I'm a space planning guru. HR. And
that's a lot.
Client relationships. Maintaining client relationships. He did a lot of business development, but the maintenance of the relationships really came to me. With the softer side, that really helped us.
That's great. So tell me about your career path that led you to become a partner at V-Star. Not many people know that Venus Williams is actually an interior designer. It's like when I say I'm interviewing the, partner of V-Star Interiors, Venus Williams, Venus, the tennis player. I'm like, yeah. So tell me about how you met. This is a great story.
Okay. So... it's interesting. So Venus went to school for fashion design in Fort Lauderdale and graduated there with fashion design and started taking a few classes in interior design. And she is still to finish. She has quite the busy career. And I call it her side job, her side hustle. I had sold my half of my company and swore off design and wanted to slow down, move to Palm Beach, out of the hustle and bustle of Miami. And that's when the market crashed. So in 2008, the housing market had crashed. Her company was running, V-Star, was running as a luxury residential firm here locally in the Jupiter area. And when that fell, she realized she wanted to diversify her company. She asked a mutual friend of ours, the perfect timing, there's not going in anything in the market. It's back to just me. I want someone to take my company and diversify and make it commercial. He said, well, I have a friend and I know she could do it, but she swore off design. She's in your area and she's moved there and she's had a son and you can call her and see what happens. And at that point in my life, I had my son, my first child, and I had taken off a year and really put forth the effort to be a stay-at-home mom.
How old is your son, Ben?
He was a year old. Okay. And I had started taking on residential clients because I couldn't sit still. And that's what I do. Like you said, right. I was meant to be doing this. And I had just told my husband the night before she called that I would like to go back into the field, that this
night before you wanted to start again, you got a call.
Yeah. So I tell my husband and the next day I get a call from someone named Venus saying, hey, I got your name, Mike, and I wanted to see if you would be interested. And I said, well, no harm. I'll meet you. I'll see if I can help you.
Okay.
And the rest is history. It's almost 13 years ago.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's great. 13 years already. That's awesome. So what services do you specialize in V-Star?
So we have a hospitality, multifamily, and luxury residential. So in luxury residential, I joke that some of our projects are like boutique hotels.
Oh my God, really? It's that big?
It's that big. And it's a lot of fun and it takes a little bit of a different muscle, right?
So I hear that you have a whimsical, kind of playful design aesthetic. Can you talk about that?
We really pride ourselves in that each design is specific to either, if it's residential, it's specific to that person. And that's a little bit easier to create. But for all of our projects, the design aesthetic follows your target market and demographics and right. your surroundings. And so we don't have this particular design aesthetic. And then we take that design and we try and make it as large as we can make it. And whatever budget we are given, we try to make it as large as we can make it with color and energy and fun.
It must be fun working with a large budget.
Oh, right? No. That's not what, don't misunderstand. Oh. We get really tight budgets too.
Okay. You do have those type of work too, right? Both.
Yes. Yes.
Okay, let's step back because I want to talk about you as a mom and how you built your career and taking care of your family and the business. Like, what was it like for you raising a family while building your interior design business? Because you started, your son was only one. And so what was it like? Can you share?
Absolutely. So it's still going. My children are still fairly young, but I think it's the successful part is being flexible and giving myself a little bit of grace, right? So every day is going to be different. Your priorities are going to shift by the hour, sometimes the minute, depending. The flexibility of others have been wonderful. I think that in the industry, we've been able to accommodate working mothers. We understand the needs. Also, a lot of late nights, right? So if I wanted to be there for a show, or if I wanted to be there if they were sick or otherwise, I was there. And then once they went to bed, I was working. And that was what it took. And I wanted to do both. That was And I want to do both. I'm home today with a sick kid, and that's just part of my life. And so I do whatever I can.
Yeah. Do you have a good support system?
Yes. My husband is extremely supportive. So while I'm traveling, sometimes, I think it was February, I was out for 4 weeks. And that's extremely important. It's a support system. He's there. You know, he'll support me the nights. I have a late night. I'm sorry. No. Okay. I'm going to do the runaround. That's important. But it was important to us both that we were the ones making the rules and raising our children.
That's great. So you were gone for 4 weeks?
Yeah, on and off. Yes.
Okay. Because I was gone for 5 weeks and my husband too, like the care of the kids. I mean, I did my best, like preparing all the meals, you know, as much as I can, because my kids are hungry all the time. So kudos to our husbands, right?
Absolutely.
So you run an all women firm, right?
Yes, we are all women. Not on purpose.
All moms, or who? Tell me about your team and your culture.
So we have a very wide variety of people. There are some that are single, some about to get married, actually two this year are getting married, which is really exciting. We get to hear about the weddings and the plannings, and Bobby just got her dress this past weekend. That was fun to relive that with her excitement. They'll probably start a family at some point. There's a few of us that have children, and we get to lift each other up, commiserate, also feel, you know, we've made that decision. Not all people make the decision to be a working mom. And there's a lot of mom shaming in every which direction. I think it's a difficult job to be a stay-at-home mom. I couldn't hack that job. I had to go back to work. That's my choice. And I get to commiserate with the other mothers about the mother's guilt. And then there's some that have made the decision that, you know, they don't want children for one reason or another, and we get to support them, and we get to be their contraception while they're hearing all our wild stories.
And then they
stories.
See your kids, they're like, oops, we don't want kids. Right. So that's great. So has running an all women team, how did it affect your leadership style? Let's talk about like what happened during the pandemic. Like how did you run your office during, you know, this time?
Yeah, it's been difficult. I would always say, you know, even in our culture, we say we have a servant purpose. So I would call myself a servant leader. I always ask them, how can I help? You know, if I'm even giving them a task, I'm asking, how can I help? I'm part of it. We are a team. We are a group. I feel like with women, especially, it's, you know, how can I support you in anything? I want to be your mentor in all parts of your life. I want you to trust me. I want to be able to trust you. I feel like my honesty helps in communication and with, you know, my softer approach or charismatic approach, whatever you want to call that. I feel like they open up more to me, and I feel like it creates a stronger bond and a stronger team. So during COVID, a lot of it was, you know, I know what I think, right? But instead of leading as a, you know, dictator or otherwise, I'm getting their opinions. What is your comfort level? And asking each person, honestly, what is your comfort level? And I took the least comfortable level. And that was our litmus test. That's where we ran. That's what we ran with. If that person is uncomfortable with this, then we're not, that's how we're going to operate. And that was very important. I feel like, you know, we did have to make some hard decisions. You know, I don't do those lightly. I come to hear tears just like anybody else.
Right.
I feel their pain.
Yeah. So when I introduced you earlier, you said that you made sure V-Star was a well-oiled machine, running like a well-oiled machine. Can you teach us how to do that?
Well, that is with the team, right?
Yeah.
Part of the process, I am not an island. I cannot be my own. I am no one without my team. Absolutely. I could not do anything day to day without them. I rely on them heavily. Once we started growing, I had joined Venus. We started, right? And then we hired on the first person and the next person, and they were more junior and kind of growing and lifting up. Once we got to a certain point, I had to make a hard call, which I believe anybody in the industry would have to make. It's, am I going to be the business side or am I going to be the design side? I don't believe once you get too busy that you can run both. At that point, I brought on Holly Nixon, who has been amazing. Taking on data from your entire team, their experience, throwing out what doesn't work for your team, and then adopting what does, that's how you create a well-oiled machine. Being inflexible, you're never going to get anywhere, or you only have to do it our way, or not listening to others. That's where you get the kinks and the cogs, right? So bringing on and adapting constantly. I mean, we've learned in the past few years that we have to adapt, but always being able to do that, I think that's how you create a well-oiled machine.
And that's good that you're open-minded, that you know your limitations and you know when to ask for help, right?
Absolutely.
Because I know a lot of firm owners, like I have a friend who looks like he hasn't slept in years, but he's very proud that he does everything, bookkeeping, business development, website maintenance, drafting. And I'm like, how is that sustainable when you're trying to grow a business? So that's good that you're able to, grow a team based on your strengths and, and your limitations, right? Invite people to join. I also like what you said, that you're not an island. You have, you need support from others. A lot of firm owners, right now things are extremely busy. Like everyone else is doing great. But what about, what are kind of strategies you can offer or you can share with firm owners? Because you've been through a lot of, you've been through the 2008 recession. I mean, I certainly have, and COVID. Like, what are like diversification strategies you can share with firm owners who are just busy drafting and designing and not even thinking about the next client or the next recession or the next whatever, like how would you teach that to someone who's just busy drafting and working?
Well, I think it's important. Relationships are everything. And even if they don't give you tangible money, right? You don't see dollar signs there. Those relationships will carry you into the future. Having open conversations with others in your industry. During COVID, one of the architects that we know, love him dearly. I call him the Dades from 3877. Love you guys. They created a team of industry leaders and business leaders. And we all got on the phone and we listened and we were honest. And how does your firm work? How does your firm work? Are we competitive? Sure. You know, we know that at some point we might be going for the same project, but we also know that we are going to speak to each other honestly and give each other the support. We're in the same industry. I think that helps a lot. Many times you are in a certain field and you're not willing to speak with someone in your industry because of fear that you might lose all your projects or they might know your industry secret. Guess what? They already know it. They're in it. They're creating the same proposal you are, and you're even more competitive if your contract is saying the same thing. You're even more competitive if you're going with the same number. One of you is going to beat the other one out for one reason or another. It could be personality, could be the color of your hair, you don't know. It's just having those conversations, and just as your investment partner or your investment leader, whoever that is in your life, they're going to tell you to diversify your portfolio. Don't put all your money in the bank and let it sit there. Not everything in cash, not everything in investments. Oh, have some in tech, some in this. That's what you need to do in your industry as well.
So it's good to really make connections even with your competitors, because your competitors can be your collaborators in the future, right?
Absolutely. Like,
and that's how I belong to the Women in Architecture, Women Architecture Collective Facebook group. And some women are looking for jobs. They post that I'm looking for a job, or some firm owners, hey, I have an opening, or I can't take on this job. Would anyone in Houston, I'm in the Houston area, take this small project? So it really, I think generosity is the key to success. Like my father always told me, like if you lead your life with a close hand and very selfish, you will never receive any blessings. You gotta always give to receive. So your hand is always open to give and to receive. And I think that's very difficult to do, but you know, I try to live the way he taught me. And you know, like you, servant leadership, how can you empower your team and your people so that they can be, you know, successful? Right?
Absolutely. And you know, in that, when your greatest lessons, when did you learn them? Off of your greatest mistakes.
Yes.
It's not fun to watch, and you know they're going to make it, and I think sometimes you just have to allow it.
So that's your greatest mistake that turned into your biggest lesson.
Well, the most recent one was somehow I got hacked on Facebook, and
oh my gosh,
I don't know what happened. And I was part of all these groups, like you just mentioned one. And I went in and I was trying to figure it out. I couldn't figure it out. I couldn't get back on. They wouldn't let me on. I sent them my ID. I sent them all these other things. Best blessing ever. I have no Facebook account now, but it is very helpful.
That is
to
so
have
crazy.
I gained about an hour of my time a day.
No, probably like four.
You never know.
You never know. That's great. I mean, yeah, imagine life without Facebook and Instagram, right? We'll be more productive.
Yeah. And industry mistakes. I mean, I've made plenty in my lifetime. You know, oh, I didn't check this, or the product changed, or I didn't check the drawing set, and oh no, they installed a different floor. What am I going to do? How am I going to tell the client this? You know, it's just things happen, you know, especially if you have a team, you're trusting your team, and oh, I trust you. I'm not going to check that. And then you have to own it in the end. That's one of the biggest lessons I've ever learned, is walking up, looking a client in the face and admitting that you messed up. That was it. There's nothing around this. I'm not going to blame it on anybody else. This is on me.
So you took it for the team, really. Like, you know, it was your responsibility. That's great. Like, instead of pointing fingers, it's just, you know, we made a mistake. Did you have to pay for all your mistakes? Like, you know, the tile change or whatever. What happens when you know, you install something that was not supposed to be?
Yeah, I mean, that happened very early in my career. And, you know, there were a few things. The client hadn't called me to verify. The spec had one letter wrong. They didn't send the sample for approval, which is part of the requirement. So we split the cost. You know, I said, yes, the mistake was on the spec. Yes, it also says that I have to have a sample for approval, and I never received it. So, you know, that could have gone either way. We split the difference. We made it happen. We wanted the project to be right. And that was it. And, you know, I won't make that one again.
I know, right? I bet you couldn't sleep for a few nights. Early in your career, that's like a big one, you know?
It is. It was like 2 months of food.
Right. I mean, I also made a similar mistake, that a roof pitch was wrong. And like my boss that time when I was working, he really owned up to the mistake and like told me, next time, don't do this. That was, yeah, it was kind of traumatic, but I realized how to be a good boss and to really protect your people. Actually, that's one of the things that I liked about my boss. Like he told me, he gave me an earful, but he owned it, and he apologized to the client. and didn't really make me feel that bad because it was early in my career. So that's also one of the ways I take care of my client, you know, my team. When they make mistakes, you know, I'll just say, okay, we'll own up to it, but we'll explain to the client, but next time, you know, you better, you know, ask me or ask your colleagues or colleagues about this. Yes, so it's funny, like going back to where your parents are from, Destin, Florida. This is totally random. I've actually been there before. Mm-hmm. It's a nice beach town. Did you grow up there?
Or, I did. Absolutely. Oh, really? I am a beach town girl. But so Miami was, I thought Tallahassee, where I went to school, was a big city. Yeah. And then I went to Miami. So I wanted to come back to a beach town. So I came to Palm Beach Gardens and the Jupiter area.
Oh, it's gorgeous there. I've been to Palm Beach. I wish I lived by the ocean. I'm from the Philippines and I'm a beach, you know, I'm an island chick.
I'm not happy unless I have water.
Oh, really? I know what you mean. So I read in your bio, or I think I listened to one of your interviews, that your favorite song is by the Beatles, Blackbird. Is that correct?
Yes, yes, yes.
You know, I had to tell you this. I don't play any instruments. I don't play I played the piano when I was six, but when I moved to the U.S. 6 years ago after the Philippines, anyway, I picked up a guitar. I only learned one song, which was Blackbird, and I sang it. It's like a cover version, not the Beatles version. I think it was Amy Mann, or I don't know who sang it. But I just had to tell you.
Thank you. That is amazing. I love it.
Oh yeah, it's hard. I mean, I played the guitars. It's not easy to learn. And that's the only one song I learned. And that's it. And I put down my guitar and
that was it.
Yeah.
That's your party trick.
Oh my God, it's crazy. So I hear you have a favorite book to give away. What is the book? I'm curious.
A Short Guide to a Happy Life. And it's by Anna Quinlan. And it's very short. And a friend of mine actually gifted it to me. And you can read it in minutes. And what I love about it is that it's that reminder that you need to refocus on what's important, right? And like happiness comes from within, and you know, also you can have outside factors that kind of strip it from you, let's call that. Yeah. But I'm that eternal optimist. It's just how I'm programmed. And so I love that book because it's a reminder again, you know, again and again and again. And it's so short that no one can say, I don't have time to read that, because
Short.
I mean, I could read it in 20 minutes.
Oh, okay. So
it's very short.
The book is called A Short Guide to a Happy Life.
Correct.
No, because you know what? We all get carried away with little temporary, incidents in our life that in the general scheme of things, it's super minor, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Yeah. Absolutely. And this one's just it's a reminder and reflections, really. And I just love it because I don't have time to sit down and read a long book.
I know. I remember when I was in grad school, I read a lot, but now I can't imagine running your firm, taking care of people, taking care of your clients, payroll. I mean, everything merged together. And the kids, being four a soccer kids. Mom. How many kids?
Four kids.
Oh, wow. We forgot to mention that in the podcast earlier. Four kids. How old are your kids?
Four kids. Nine-year-old little girl, 10-year-old twin girls, and a 13-year-old boy.
Oh, my gosh. You are amazing, Sonia. I don't even know how you manage.
I tell people I just keep going. I don't have a choice. Yeah.
Just read that book, Happy Life, A Short Guide to a Happy Life. You know, don't sweat the small stuff. So V-Star just turned 20, right?
Yes. So exciting.
That's so weird. Like, that 20 years is a long time, but you look so young.
I am young at heart.
Yeah, you are. We all are young at heart, right? So what's next for V-Star?
Oh, wow. So we just completed a 10,000 square foot spa at PGA National Resort. Can't wait for that photography to come out in the next month or so. So keep your eyes peeled.
10,000, that's major.
It was a large spa and we redid space planning, had to address quite a few things. You know, as in all projects, there was some, we had the dream and there was some value engineering, but I think that project is absolutely gorgeous. And it's open now, which is amazing. The joke is world domination. That's what I usually say. But we are, dream, we do
dream big. You know, dream big.
Dream big or go home.
So world domination, any offices all over the world or what's it?
So we do have some international projects now in Puerto Rico, cool. Two hotel projects, which is great for us. You know, that's the baby steps. We want to remain boutique and small. We want to always have, you know, be able to have those very intimate conversations with our clients. So we don't really want offices all over the world, but we want to work all over the world.
Yeah, keep it lean and mean, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
You gotta keep the cash flow going, the well-oiled machine. You don't need too much staff, but you just have to keep it lean. I think that's the way to go. And what's next for you? Personal projects? Anything on the next 3 years? More kids? No, just kidding.
Sorry, I didn't mean to laugh. Absolutely not. No more kids. I'm all set. Just making sure, you know, I have so many things in my head. Right now, I just want to redo my living room.
Yeah.
I'm the plumber with the leaky faucet, right? It's been sitting the same way since we moved in. I'd like to do that. That's personal. I did take, you know, an understanding architecture course through Harvard, and I really enjoy that. I don't intend to go into architecture, but I love learning more about it. I'd like to get into painting and art again, which is one of my outlets, and maybe finding some more space for me.
Wow, that's great. I had no idea. I mean, I know we talked about the four kids earlier, but that's super impressive. Sonia, thank you for your time and congratulations on all your success and accomplishments and being the leader that you are. I'm sure your team members and, you know, Venus, they're so grateful for what you do for your company, for your clients, but most importantly for your team members. So thanks for becoming a guest on my podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you for listening to the Architect My Life podcast. We'd love to hear from you on social media using the hashtag Architect My Life podcast. Be sure to follow me on Instagram at @Aya_ArchitectMyLife. And for women business owners, I invite you to join the all-woman private Facebook group called Architect My Life. If you haven't already, we'd appreciate it if you'd subscribe to the show, as well as rate or review us wherever you access your podcasts. If you think you have something to add to the conversation for your success running a business, we invite you to apply to be a guest in one of our upcoming episodes. Visit architectmylife.com/podcast to learn more. Remember, work-life balance is important, so join us for tips from others as they share their experiences on managing and growing their businesses and balancing their lives. I'm Aya Schlachter. Thanks again for listening. Until next time.